Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. And I'm back with you on 28, and we're talking with Down on His Fur, Robert, and Robert's letter, and one last thing I'd like to talk about. When it comes to the Egyptologist and, you know, the experts on ancient Egypt and Sumer, you can pretty much throw out everything, everything probably post-1960. All the good stuff is prior to that. And some of the more controversial stuff, even the guy I just quoted, is very controversial. I found that the most controversial stuff is probably going to end up being in the area of the truth much more so than the conservative stuff. Because this type of thing is stranger than fiction. It is the nature. It's kind of like trying to predict what white rabbits are going to do. There's a lot you got to know and take into account, and there's always some variable that you miss because we're the creative rabbits. But I do not believe they built them from scratch. I think the story is going to be far more provocative than anyone knows. I don't believe you or anyone else, Robert, knows when those pyramids were built. I don't think they know the whole story on how they were built or how they were rebuilt or how things were added to, taken away from. I don't think anyone knows that whole story. The ones that do know it, the ones that do know the actual dates, the ones that do know everything, are keeping things heavily hidden until they start rolling things out after this big war and everything they're going to have any day now. But that's where they're going to wrap it up. They're going to wrap up we're going to learn all about ourselves, which should be interesting. Between now and then, well, you know, you can speculate all you want to. I can only tell you what the people in charge believe. There's been a lot of things hidden in regards to dates. The challenge when you get into, when you get into the type of, I'll give you a classic example. You know, Plato goes in there and talks to Solon, or one of the ancient Greeks goes into Egypt, and you got the story of Atlantis. The problems you get into is you got an island going down in the sea. Well, you don't know their dating for that. You don't know what a year means. That's heavily controversial. You don't know what they mean by a year. You don't know what they mean by an island. You know, the Hopi Indians are talking about the whole continent of North America when they talk about Turtle Island. What do they mean by that? Is there a myth within a myth? Is something embedded in that? Because a lot of these groups embed things in things. When you get into, like, the Masonic groups and even in Asia, they always embed things. These different societies where they'll be able to read it, but you won't be able to. And it's been like this post the last big disaster. There was a huge disaster on this planet. It's been like that ever since. So you got to know what their meaning is. It's kind of like, let me give you a what you see is what you get. Imagine you were 10,000 years out, and you got a hold of a book. It's a famous children's book called The Little Train That Could. And you're reading The Little Train That Could 10,000 years from now. And you're an expert on the English language, but you're reading this book. Well, you got to know a few things. The first thing you need to know is most of the things in there are irrelevant to the moral of the story. You could change the little train that could to the little pink rabbit that could. You could change the location of the story. You could change all kinds of stuff. But I think I can. I think I can. And the moral of the story is going to be the same as the intended author means, meant at the time of writing. So you get into things like that, the morals of the story, what it's trying to tell you, and it ain't easy to figure out. because you're dealing with white rabbits and how sneaky they are and hiding stuff and embedding stuff. But that's one of the challenges with these ancient civilizations. And the foremost at this, of course, have been the Germans. And that leads up to World War II. And after that, things went underground and they started moving things away, especially in ancient India. I don't believe they built everything from scratch there. I believe they moved in after a big disaster. I'm interested in where they moved in from and some other different things like that. But let's see what else... before we go, the point I would try to make, one last point, you talk about some type of fantasy civilization. Well, we know that in Nazi Germany, they got a hold of the king, sure. They were invited into the hidden Tibetan city, and they got a hold of the king, sure. And the king, sure, was about some big Aryan Super Neverland. That's what the book was about. And we have a lot of technology coming out of World War II. I think we both can agree on. What they got a hold of, I don't know. But I do know there was all kinds of Buddhist monks. I don't know whether there's a few thousand of them who ended up dead in Berlin. They were there to translate this thing. That's not fantasy. That's fact. Now, if you want to doubt doubt everything, there's heavily smoke here. There's a lot of smoke, so there's going to be fire. There's baseball bats coming. They're going to come all at once, and they're going to overwhelm you visually. So I'm going to be right on the direction, but I just don't know how wild this stuff is going to get. Because what we're doing is reading The Little Train That Could, and we don't know what a train is. We don't know the language. We don't know the symbolism. We don't know the morals of the story. But someone did know. Someone found out a whole lot. And when it comes down to, I talked about the fantasy rabbits and the skeptic rabbits. Well, white rabbits fall into either one of those two categories. I learned that my deep skepticism toward this stuff was simply another type of fantasy. It was the fantasy of the naive and the absurd. I was being extremely ignorant. I was being extremely naive to the extent that I was in fantasy land. I don't believe any social engineer, any social book about any great civilization post the Frankfurt School or post Tavistock, because they fund anyone that gets anything published and promoted, whether it be Muslims or the great Chinese civilizations, I don't buy into, because there's always something missing. There's always something, you know, whether it be white slaves or the one that taught the Chinese Kung Fu and all the ancient emperors who had eyes as blue as a lotus. There's always something you're missing in the equation. Because one thing we see to be true right now is that there's only one standard of civilization. A civilization is something that rises to a higher peak. The white rabbits get it done, and we get it done from scratch. We can take it to a higher peak. We're the only ones that have demonstrated from scratch that we can take civilization from zero to a higher peak. And that's what civilization is not knocking someone off. It's not us giving the Chinese something, them running with it, and them us helping them and them being able to take off and run with it. Civilization, it goes from zero to a higher peak. We're the only ones that have ever demonstrated that. In Japan, they've done very well, but of course we walked in and sparked them in World War II. In China, they've done okay. They've done okay. I don't think they had near the gene pool they once did. And we're gonna go on to that next, because Robert Down is for Robert is a Sino-supremacist. We've never seen these groups rise to a higher peak without our help. Typically, it takes us to spark them. So I always assume anything they've done in ancient times was sparked by us as well. That's a logical assumption, because that's what I see to be true today. And when it comes to technology, we're on a whole nother level. One of the things that is frustrating about the elites when it comes to, like, the young, the ones of maybe my generation and whatnot, is they don't know something, and that is the elites are masters at creating a consensus trance, fear-based consensus trance. And it works very well for males, especially white males. They on non-whites, they always create a different type of consensus trance. And that's a superiority consensus trance. They run around telling these people that the Mexicans, that they're related to Quetzalcoatl and everything else, and they get the Mexicans and their Aslan, and the Ford Foundation pumps a bunch of money into it, and then you get Mexicans running around thinking they're super gods, and it's all a big joke. They run around and they put the Europeans in a consensus trance that someone's out to get them, and then it pretty much just freezes you, and that's a big joke. But they're both the same control features, down a different pathway. But they both end up the same result. What it does is it pretty much gets the Mexicans out thinking they're going to do something when in fact they never did it to begin with. And then it gets the, Europeans pretty much freezing in their spot, freezing in their place, thinking, someone's out to get them. And some of it's just done for defense budgets. You know, like the Chinese are doing this, the Chinese are doing that. We're decades ahead of them in most things. It just becomes a big joke to someone like me. But Flame of the East has written me, and he's like, do any of your listeners know that controlling a group through fear-based fear-based consensus trance, there's a phrase for it, and the phrase is known as black magic. Well, they don't, but they do now. And that is true when you're controlling people through fear. If you see these fire and brimstone preachers that are controlling people through fear, there is a term for it. It's black magic. It has a tremendous effect on consciousness, and the elites, believe it or not, are very big into this type of thing. I don't fall for it. So I try to make sure my listeners are healthy and thinking and rational and always coming back to the basics. But I don't buy that any group has done something without us sparking them, because I don't see it to be true today. I don't buy that, not that they couldn't do something, and we're going to go into some Asia stuff in a few minutes. I don't really buy that these groups, like the Mexicans ran Aslan and whatnot, because, that's not what Montezuma told the Spaniards. I just don't buy any of it. I don't buy anything post-social engineering, post-giant social engineering that came out of the 50s, after World War II, and that got going, especially in the late 60s. But let's go on and read this. So keep in mind, listeners, that that this is generational, because you haven't really been exposed. You haven't been exposed to what... anything you've been exposed to has been post-World War II. And post-World War II, they tried to get rid of all the controversial stuff about Egypt. They tried to get rid of it. They didn't get rid of it. They just swept it underneath the rug. But that rug's about ready to be jerked underneath, out from underneath everyone. And that's just how they operate. Why are they operating? Well, they're building into these events. They're building these events, and they're already starting to happen. But let's keep reading this, and I'm going to interject and answer some questions on this and my thoughts on this and some questions the Flame of the East then had. And let's see anything else I have. But keep in mind that your skepticism may just be a fantasy of the naive. Being skeptical is one thing, but being extremely naive about what the elites believe or what they're looking at, a lot of these guys believe all kinds of stuff. And some of it may be a little out there, maybe for no reason, but there's a thread. And if there's smoke somewhere, consistent smoke, there's fire. And, on these type of topics, I believe baseball bats exist. And I've seen this operate generationally. I know of a few, like, scientific-minded people, degrees, PhDs, my generation. My generation is not baby boomer. I'm after the baby boomers. And there was a Generation X, Generation Y type scientists, young scientists. And one of them was a fantasy rabbit. The other three were very skeptics. One of them was mildly skeptical, like me. Two were heavy-duty skeptics. And they didn't understand what type of technology they had out when it comes to holograms. You've heard of holograms. Well, our race has some heavy-duty technology when it comes to holograms that they haven't really put out there yet. They didn't really understand where that was going because they hadn't seen the scientific papers and because they had the big degrees from the big schools, very famous, very, very educated, big PhDs from very prestigious universities. So they thought they knew something. Very dangerous. And so the fantasy rabbit walked in prepared for everything. Basically, these rabbits got shaken to the very foundation of their existence. They thought they knew everything out there, and they got hammered. They got a baseball bat swung at them, and they got pounded. And I was talking to one of them about them, and one of them may not make it. He may not psychologically make it, because if you think you know what's going on and you think you're up to date on something, but really, there's a lot more out there, and you're dealing with white rabbits. You're dealing with a rabbit that'll make a plane and jump out of it. you're not going to, you don't know what these guys are up to behind the scenes, and they're all preparing for these events. But they were really shaken up. Now, what could these holograms do? If I told you, you wouldn't believe me. But I haven't seen enough to really know. I know about some other things that I've been hit with a baseball bat on. But, you know, baseball bats exist. They exist in different sizes and stuff like that. But I remember seeing these scientists and the skeptics were just shaken. They were just shaken. And they were asking me, because they know I know a little bit about this. I said, there's baseball bats there and it's generational. Our generation is very skeptical. We haven't been inundated with the type of crazy stuff the Nazis were looking at, and the type of stuff that was pretty much a staple in Western civilization prior to Nazism. The type of Egyptology and the type of Sumerian knowledge of what was going on in Sumer, the different types of wild and crazy theories that all just went underneath the rug, and we really, they weren't prepared to deal with any of that because it wasn't in their little scientific cubbyhole writing. There wasn't any, you know, it wasn't coming out down their pipeline. Then all of a sudden they got smacked by it. That can happen, and that's going to happen to a lot of everyone listening to this. It's going to happen to. They're really not prepared for what our race may have done. But that's just the way it works. I don't really know how I can get you prepared for it other than tell you where there's smoke, there's always fire, especially with white rabbits. And when it comes to doing crazy things, we're unpredictable. But just know that where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's baseball bats. You know, as soon as I get a feeling of now I know there's a wiffle ball bat, and there's bats that exist with holograms. Well, I don't like getting hit with bats. I've been hit with one before, so you know, if I think there's even a wiffle bat, I get out of the way. But it is by and large, Robert, generational. Because we haven't been exposed a whole lot. And everything we have been exposed to are a bunch of, lazy, whites typically look at the whites around them. And then they look at the whites behind them. But we really don't stop and understand that if there's a bunch of idiots behind you, there's going to be a handful of super bright ones way ahead of us. That's natural law. For what it's worth, the Asians do understand that. The Asians don't look at any of the dumb whites standing around. They don't look at any of the whites, any of the Asians in their peer group, because they know there's a handful of Asians at the top running everything. That's how those societies work. But we'll go on and we'll talk about the Sino-supremacism. Now Robert goes on a long, I guess Asian supremacist, anti-white rant. That type of thing, but I'll go ahead and read it and then I'll comment. I do, however, agree with your assessment of some aspects of white psychology. This is where he compliments me. Whites are peculiar, self-loathing people, pathologically so. Their gullibility in believing fanciful gibberish is sickening. But then again, a lot of people believe in all kinds of fanciful gibberish. Robert, I don't think there is, I mean, let's, you know, you got all kinds of different fantasies going on in East Asia right now. I don't think there's ever been a single Jewish lie that whites haven't lapped up with gusto and consequently slaughtered each other over. You name it, communism, Christianity. He goes on, it's wordism you speak of. I know you seem to think this is a source of our creativity as well. Well, if it is, I'm one of those who thinks it should be bred out. For one thing, I don't believe in the mystical quality of creativity. Creativity is simply a function of those who have higher IQs. Highly intelligent people synthesize information in new, interesting ways. The Chinese themselves led the world technologically for about 1,000 years. I don't really believe that, Robert. See Robert Temple's The Genius of China. I don't really believe his book, Robert. But even if it were conceded that whites were slightly more creative than Northern Asians, is it worth our many psychological defects? I don't believe it is. We might have more creative genius, but we also have a self-loathing, and he talks about all the perverse porn, tribal feeling, girls who've gone wild, bisexual free agents in the world's interracial, disgustingly perverse $13 billion a year porn industry. Now that's white female creativity and feminist empowerment for you. The rampant materialism and constant trying to keep up with the Joneses. The belief in Semitic superstitious garbage. He goes on and on. We seem to be always at the vanguard of tolerating, even promoting some new sexual perversity like homo marriages. Whether it's ancient Greece, decadent ancient Rome, or present whites always seems to lapse into a psychosexual degeneracy. What could have led to this in our evolutionary history is a mystery to me, but it seems pretty unmistakable. Between white females and their dark flesh fetish and bisexual experiment, white men fleeing toward Asian Latin women as a consequence of the burgeoning white homo populace. We seem to be uniquely psychosexually maladaptive people. Sure, we got inventions, but what will they avail us when we brown ourselves out as our kinsmen did in the past in India? I'm afraid the Asians have all our strengths, but none of our weaknesses. They've been there homogenous and solid as rock for 6,000 years. Wow, so have the grizzlies in Yellowstone. And we'll likely be there for at least much more. That's true, they don't move. Whereas we're heading for extinction inside of 2 centuries. They've got total package in our default position once we're extinct. once we're extinct, law-abiding, healthy, clannish, survival instincts, leadership, and shepherds for folks rather than seeking to sell them out for foreign cheap labor. A philosophy encouraging going with the Tao's flow and reverence for their ancestors. Whites, by contrast, feel some sick need to always try to improve on nature as if the universe itself and reality of it is too inadequate. For people who are spiritually ill at ease with objective reality, perhaps this disconnect is also transferred onto themselves and their self-loathing. We've seen where this sort of tampering leads to whites. They create disastrous mental abstractions which take on life of their own and try to foist them on reality with ensuing catastrophic consequences. If this is the price of our creativity, we can do without it. Sure, for the highest IQ whites, maybe they invent gadgets, but for more average whites, it just enables them to indulge in unwholesome instincts in many cases. If we're to survive our present condition, massive eugenics would be required to sort out these defective qualities. I've come to actually see whites as an intermediate race between blacks and Asians, with our animal impulses and passions tending more toward Africans, but with us having higher IQs. Maybe it's just higher IQs give us new and more efficient ways of indulging our niggerish animal appetites, which result in our decadence. Gadgets are not the end-all be-all of life. Other qualities like character, level-headedness, extended racial family succeed such values, but I've noticed over and over again that white nationalists' invention of gadgetries is the measure by which they keep score of who's inferior, who's superior. This in itself reveals much of our true nature of our character and priority as whites. If you read it thus far, thanks for reading and thanks for your patience. I know I don't have anything constructive to offer about the mess we're in, but I guess I just wrote this to vent my own demoralization, as you call it. I'll keep listening to your podcast. Take care. Down on his fur, Robert. Well, let's go back over what he's talking about. The Chinese themselves led the world technologically for 1,000 years. See Robert Temple's Genius China. That's all, again, post-social engineering, 1950s. The challenge you get in with this, Robert, is that there's two groups in China. China is a giant slave trapped between two rivers, the Yangtze and whatever the other one's called, the Wan or whatever. Let's look up the Chinese rivers real quick. There's two big rivers there, and it's a giant slave trap. And that is, and we have, let's see what they are. And the Yellow River and the Yangtze River, I guess that's what they're called, the Yellow River, and it's a giant slave trap. And these slave traps have been ruled by two castes, off and on for a long, long time. Maybe you've been around non-whites before and they just say, I don't know what you guys are, you know, yelling about the Jews for. They're just white too. Or why didn't, you know, all whites can be Jews or something like that. They don't realize that there's differences in the European tribes. Well, in China, there's a huge difference between these two castes that run things. And the reason they run things is because race is real. These castes are basically only intermarried within their own. They do not marry common, Chinese. The Chinese are basically slaves to some extent. That's you're getting my opinion. But if you do your homework, that there are two sects in China. One is pink rabbits. That's what they are. They have an ancient link with the pink rabbits. The other have an ancient link with us on some extent. I just don't know the full extent. In fact, I've determined that these two castes have probably, blood has flown more between these two groups than any two groups in the history of the world. I mean, blood flows between these groups. You know, the Japanese wink and nod, and they come in there. They come in there in World War II or prior to World War II, and then next thing you know, the blood is flowing there. The Rape of Nanking. But what you don't know is that there's a caste in China that works with groups within Korea all the way to Japan. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Japanese emperor isn't their emperor, because East Asians, there's a lot of interesting stuff that goes back a long ways. The other side is pink rabbitish, and they come in power under Chairman Mao, and they destroy all their stuff. But let's go on and talk about this. Well, typically when you see any type of technological innovation somewhere, you got to look at where it started. In China, everything started with the rice paddy culture that comes out of ancient India. Kung Fu comes from, you know, the guy has eyes as blue as a lotus. These ancient emperors had eyes as blue as a lotus. Then you have the splitting up and the Japanese start forming there's two castes basically, and that one tries to get over on the other. In fact, one of the castes that isn't troublemaking, that isn't pink rabbits, has now got it over on the other one to such an extent that there's outright warfare. And again, pink rabbit banksters and elitesters are at the top of Anglosphere. That's what you see is what you get, especially the Jew rabbit elites. And they do business with the pink rabbits in China. That kind of makes sense. And the other side, and when you get into this stuff, it is wide sky. I thought all Chinese are the same. Well, they're not. There's two castes that run things. And this one caste that, let's say they do the German high step, they got it over on the other one just recently. Big time. Big time pulled the rug out from underneath them. And, you know, these two groups, blood flows. When Chairman Mao came in, Chairman Mao was destroying all their ancient stuff, and he was annihilating them. That's how that works. And these are things that I didn't know. It's kind of like an outside observer thinking that Russia, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia was just Russian fratricide. Well, yeah, it's a little bit dicier than that. It's a little bit, there's always more to the story. But anyways, this group got it over on the other group, the ones that do the German high step, let's say, got it over on the pink rabbits in China, and the pink rabbits in China have the pink rabbits in Anglosphere. You know, they're coming in there. Google is threading in this. You've seen all the stuff between Google and China. Well, Google was doing big business in China. What happened? Well, you've seen the Chinese start, you know, harassing and putting to death drug dealers out of Anglosphere. You know, someone's out of London. He was supposed to be a European citizen, but he's not. He's non white, and I looked at the guy, and the Chinese put him to death. There are two sides in China. One side will do everything pink rabbits do here. They promote all kinds of dysfunctionalities. There's big problems already with homosexuality in China, believe it or not. There's big problems with pornography. The other side will crack down on it. These sides go to war, and the blood flows like nothing anyone's ever seen. In fact, I think it's probably one of the most interesting wide sky things that most people don't know about. Now, if you want to argue China's Sino-supremacism or anything like that, you're welcome to get on Bugs and argue with Bob. Bob has forgotten more about East Asians than any white racialist on this planet. He knows all about them. He'll tell you there's two sides. I've come to conclude, because one side goes out of their way to preserve our ancient stuff. They're always turning over ancient mummies in Asia. They've turned over more there lately than anywhere else, and one side goes out of their way to put them in nice museums and everything else, which they wouldn't do in America, but they go out of their way to put them in there, and they're not all nomads. They are very articulated, very, very distinctly dressed. But if there were a big disaster on this planet right now, we would find white rabbits in three-piece suits, and we would find white rabbits looking pretty disheveled. It really depends on where and how, but they find these white mummies all the time in Asia. It's become a big phenomenon in China, and one side of the Chinese equation always brings it out and does a very good job putting them in museums and everything. They take a lot of care with our history. But the history of the planet is kind of interesting right now. But when it comes to China, these two groups go at it. They go at it like nothing you could ever imagine. But if you look at what the Japanese did in China, what they were looking to do, and if you look at what Chairman Mao did when he came to power, there was some blood flowing. There's some blood flowing. There's not really enough trust in my opinion, among the Asians to ever do anything long term. However, there is this caste, and this caste that runs through China, through the top of China, through Korea and through Japan, that they've always been good partners for us, apparently. And the Japanese, I have no reason to believe they wouldn't ever be good partners, but they don't really intimidate me. I know a little bit about the truth of them because they look to us for everything. But I'm going to go into that in the next one. I'm going to go into the rollback, the actual strategy that's been employed post-World War II, my opinion of the strategy and how it's unfolding in front of our head, our face, because it's now starting to heat up. The people at the top of certain parties on this planet are now in a fight for their existence, and they now realize it, which is kind of interesting. Let's see. But when it comes down to Asians and pornography and stuff like that, they you see, Robert Race is real, so they're never going to have our dysfunctionality. Our dysfunctionalities externalize themselves. They're very easy to spot. Most white nationalists fawn over the Japanese and fawn over the Chinese and stuff like that, because they see the Japanese keep out other things, or basically the Japanese internalize their problems. We externalize. Misogynation picks up in a society, we brown out, and then we consolidate. They don't have that problem. They have the problem China went through after 1,000 years. China, did tremendously well for a while, like all East Asians, many empires do. And then either the blood becomes thinner that does well, they start breeding in with the common peasants, and then everything just, they turn themselves inward, they build up a great wall, and then everything goes to dust. They turn themselves inward and everything goes to dust. And that's typically the Asian cycle. We externalize our problems, and then, misogynation picks up and we brown out and go into consolidation. The Chinese and even the Japanese now, they internalize things. But it both results in the same process, you know, the tribe, basically death of a tribe. It doesn't matter whether it's misogynation or cutting down birth rates radically, dangerously low, and closing off everything and creating a little fantasy society inside. The Japan and some of the stuff going on in even Singapore, prudish Singapore, and Shanghai. It's become a fantasy land for adults. That's what they do. Although I'd say China is probably more open now than it ever was, but they tend to go to a certain point, then they close the walls up and they create their own little fantasy lands and everything goes to dust. And then the next white rabbit group comes in and they spark them again, and then they do quite well for a while, then they close themselves off and everything goes to dust. They don't go any further with it. That is their challenge. And if this one cast, this group ever got together, and I'm guessing they will, and combine this cast, the strains of it through Korea and through Japan, through China, I think they do quite well. But they're always going to look to us for certain reasons based on their ancient history. And you know, they can be good partners. I'm not really afraid of them. The other side, the pink rabbit side, are very crazy and they're prone to hubris, which allowed the other side to get something up on them. Because if you're prone to arrogance, you're going to create problems for yourself long run. As far as porn goes, I actually have seen a report on this that it shocked me, but there was enough links in there that I can tell you that the most dramatic, outrageous, weird porn trends are in East Asia. Some of the biggest money porn trends are in East Asia. They are not like ours, though. What comes to mind in the Japanese and the stuff, and again, in China, you got two sides. You're going to have one side that tries to push porn. And by the way, they're already having massive problems with kids in school. They're already in Shanghai, they're having massive problems with disrespect. The social engineer, they basically, one side of it, adopted all the social engineering from Anglosphere, the second generation communism, and unleashed it. The other side is fighting it. They fight it against pornography and everything else. I don't know if it's a losing battle for them, but it really depends on us. But one side is fighting it, the other side is pushing it, kind of like, Jews and Gentiles here, I guess, the Jews have a little more upper hand, but they are constantly fighting pornography there, and the other side is constantly pushing it. But anyways, I saw a report, and you could pretty much do your homework on porn online. Porn online is huge. But when it comes down to outrageous stuff, porn, actually the East Asians lead the way. But they lead in ways that I never even knew existed. The one that comes to mind was a link, and this report was, of course, I don't know if you've ever seen a report in Microsoft Word or whatever, but they actually had a website links in there. And it's kind of like a car accident. I had to hit some of the links to see what on earth they were talking about, because I couldn't really believe it. I don't know a lot about internal Asian trends of late or over the past 5 or 10 years, but when it comes to stuff in Japan, and Japan leads away in this stuff, and then the Chinese look at them, and the Singaporeans, they get online. You can't really police porn online in Asia until you police it in Japan, until they like crack down on Hollywood. But one of the links I hit was like, I want to say it was like sex with tentacles has become some big craze in Japan. Weird stuff. weird stuff, sex with aliens, all this weird stuff, and all this weird, I guess it's what they invented, the hentai. I want to say it's hentai. Yeah, someone in this room is nodding their head. All the anime porn, cartoon porn. They take like Star Wars and make it into cartoon. They do weird stuff. I hit some of the links, and it was like, whoa. You know, you think you've seen anything, they internalize their problems. They don't externalize it. But both results in the same thing. The death of because the Japanese and these upper castes in China are disappearing as well. They're suffering under the same challenges, except, they're not used to getting up, browning out, getting up, consolidating, and raising a civilization from nothing again. Not that we want to do it again, but they're not used to that. They're used to taking a different path. Whatever blood made their big street goes extinct, and then they get sparked again by whites again, so many thousands of years later or whatever. But the sexual degeneracy or the lesbianism and that type of thing, or the homosexuality, no, you'll find this in East Asian societies as well. So much so that they're concerned about it. Their concern is that, well, they don't have really, well, China will blame this particular caste for pushing this stuff. But in Japan, they say, well, you know, we don't have the Jews pushing tentacle sex. This stuff is our own making. We got some weird stuff going on. But they internalize stuff, they close stuff off, and they build these little fantasy worlds. They're little cartoon fantasy worlds, and that's what Tokyo's like. It's like a little fantasy world for East Asian, for Japanese. But that's also dangerous. It also decreases birth rates. It's basically a disappearing society. But that's a different way of looking at it. As far as them being some perfect group, I think you're delusional. As far as them leading the way or ever going to lead the way, I think this caste, if they got something going, if they could develop enough trust, or probably do what the Chinese would do, get rid of everything that wasn't of pretty much pull a little mind fury and get rid of all the dead weight. There's a tremendous amount of dead weight according to them in China. They've already started massive eugenics because they got a lot to do. I think they could probably do something, but it depends on how much trust they could develop across East Asia. I certainly wouldn't want to see them disappear, in spite of what you may think. I have respect for all cultures, but I'm not afraid of them. I would be afraid of one side, that they'd start a war and get wiped off the planet. And that's what one of the side that would side with us in East Asia is always afraid of, that because they have an idea what kind of weapons we have. They're not as naive as, let's say, the average white nationalist. Now, what goes on behind the scenes? They know that the average European is pretty clueless, just like the average Chinese. They know that there's a handful running things, and the military industrial complex, they don't believe toilet seats cost $50,000. They know that money's going elsewhere. They're not naive about the survival of certain German elements after Nazi Germany. They're not naive about our ancient history and the stuff that goes back to Babylon. They're not naive about any of this. You will find them very well informed. One thing they do know is race is real. And so they're generally going to look to us. The other side, the pink rabbits, especially in China, are probably as dangerous as pink rabbits here. But again, they look to the pink rabbits here. So when there's a big fight, they're going to look for their pink rabbits here and Google and whatnot to come in and try to wage war for them. Because if they get the rug pulled out from underneath them, which is what's happened, that's a challenge. As far as solid as rock for 6,000 years, they've only been in one, place for a long time. Probably more like 8,000 years they've been sitting there. Elements of them have been sitting there. And other elements of them come from other sunken lands and India, but they know a great deal about their DNA, and they're capable of great things. But when it comes down to building civilization from scratch and building it to a higher and higher peak, which is the definition of civilization, something built from scratch rising to a higher peak, we're the only ones on planet Earth that have ever done it, that anyone knows about. We do it time and time again. I'm sick of doing it, and we got some elements that are extremely dangerous. I don't know what their deal is. If they're aliens from another planet or something like that, it wouldn't surprise me because they're that unnatural. There's some very unnatural elements at the top of Western civilization. Whereas I would say that the Japanese and the Chinese are more loyal to their own to some extent. But you see, in China, they're already the pink rabbits there. The Chinese pink rabbits are already trying to import foreign labor. They're already doing all the same nonsense. They want the blended humanity. The other Chinese are in a panic. you know, again, to me, reading what you wrote is completely delusional. We do a lot more than just gadgets. White rabbits have done a lot more than just gadgets. But, you know, your opinion is your opinion. That's fine. There's a lot of people that think East Asians are all this and all that based on all this stuff that have come out and all the Discovery Channels talking about how brilliant they are. They do some interesting things, but I'm interested in what sparked it. Because the only thing I see to be true now is that we walk in and spark it. The Japanese did a lot from scratch with just a little spark. The Chinese have had a lot of help. They've had a lot of help. And I do know there's a big difference in China. You know, I don't know how big this caste was when they had their, when they did very well for 1,000 years. They did very well for 1,000 years, but apparently this caste had a lot bigger numbers. They're prone to the same thing we are. You know, you develop middle class and then they marry up and then all of a sudden you dilute the blood and, there you go. So I kind of look at it like a race within a race. It was described to me. You know, they hide behind this massive number of Chinese, and the Chinese think they're all equal, but they're not. There's two groups that run things and they don't marry outside. I'm more interested in their connection to ancient Europeans because there's one group there that goes out of their way to preserve our stuff. That's just that. This is all going to be solved pretty soon. But as far as having all of our strengths and none of our weaknesses, it's a bunch of bunk. They don't have anywhere near the creativity. I remember someone trying to argue with Bob that they were having all these new inventions and all this, all these patents coming out of China and whatnot. They sat down and proved that all these inventions were basically extensions of stuff we've already done. They have a lot of PhDs. Their PhDs go on and invent in the area that they get the PhD. Most of our PhDs that invent in another area. We are just different. I think they do what's best for themselves. I think we do what's best for us, but I'm not really afraid or intimidated by them. And I don't think we're going extinct anytime soon. Now I guess, if the pink rabbits got themselves a super high powered antichrist, they could make a run for it for about so many months, but then we're going to have Zeus killing them all. So it just depends on how superstitious you are or what you believe. And as far as whoop-de-doo sky gods, you're talking about old Indra over there in India. And the whoop-de-doo sky god in India, you know, his actual title is God the Lord of Heavens. That's his actual title, God the Lord of Sky. I'm kind of partial to him because our whoop-de-doo sky god, he shows up all over the place. Most of the white rabbits don't really know that, you know, the Romans considered, Jupiter to be Zeus and to be the Dagda. And, you know, he would probably also be Thor because, you know, he's got the big lightning weapon and he's always killing serpents and whatnot. And Indra has a big lightning weapon and he's killing everything. He sweeps the black skin out of there. But Indra is Zeus, and that's his title. Zeus's title is God, the Lord of Heavens, and he shows up all over the place. Our whoop-de-doo sky god is all over the place. But if we're going to do a whoop-de-doo sky god, I say go big or go home, and by all means, he's one that can get it done. Yeah, the Lord of Heavens. But that's just his title. And there was others in there in India, too, doing a number on sweeping the dusky skin far away. The original Reg Veda. There's another book that political correctness gnashed. If you've ever read a Reg Veda, which of course is a Babylonian mystery religion, Hinduism, that means it comes out of Babylon to some extent, and you got Indra coming in there, and, you know, him and his big fair friends going over the horizon like big shiny bulls, and granting the sun, moon, stars, and the whole entire planet for the little white rabbits. Well, I like that. It's my kind of whoop-de-doo sky god. But it's just that. It is our whoop-de-doo sky god. So when it comes to whoop-de-doo sky gods, go white, go big, or go home. But most of you probably didn't know that Indra is considered Zeus, the father of God and man. But let's go on, and I'll go on and answer some other questions. But be fair with Robert. You know, I wasn't that hard on him. If he wants to argue Asian supremacism, he's welcome to argue it on WhitakerOnline.org, simply because Bob has, you know, spent decades around Asians. He knows all about them. They're not bad people. I have no problems with them. But really, when it comes down to civilization, we're the ones that get it done. I'm not interested in running people down. I'm interested in long-term preservation and stability of my own. But we have some challenges. But the idea that they don't have those challenges are fantasy. What happens is white nationalists say race is real, but they don't really mean it. They say race is real, but then they go and look for other races, and they say, well, the East Asians don't have our deficiencies. No, they don't, because race is real. They have a whole new set. They have a whole new set. I mean, some of the weird pornography coming out of there, you know, they get worried because, like, we don't have, you know, the Japanese say, we don't have the Jews. you have an excuse. You know, you've time and time again, you built a society up from nothing, and you move and rebuilt it, and you got this dead weight. You got this, like, this albatross around your neck. You got these Jews. You got these Jew rabbits constantly running things down, running all, you know, Hitler put out, knocked the Jews out of porn business. The stuff went obsolete overnight. No white rabbits typically aren't interested in that, as far as all the weird stuff. They kind of worry about that. But in my opinion, when it comes to East Asians, peer pressure reigns. You know, the nail that sticks out gets hammered. But I have no problems with answering Robert. He has some legitimate concerns and whatnot. One of the challenges is some of this stuff, when it goes into Green Goddess type stuff, you're going into a generational problem. Generationally speaking, you've got a generation of skeptics, even the white nationalists, and they don't really realize what's out there. I speak self-referentially. I understand that now my extreme skepticism was the fantasy of the naive and ignorant. I did not realize. It wasn't skepticism. It was just a fantasy. It was another white rabbit fantasy that I was being extremely naive, simply because something went underneath the rug. Doesn't mean someone's not going to pull the rug. It doesn't mean it's not going to levitate the rug above the ground or something. And I'll go on and answer another question from the Flame of the East. The Flame of the East... it wants to know when it comes down to, most of my listeners know about conspiracy theories. Conspiracy theories are supposedly big in America. America, North America, America and Canada are lightweight when it comes to conspiracy theories. If I look at the web data, the web trends, and I actually can get a hold of stuff like this, or I have been from time to time. The last time I looked at conspiracy theory trends, the biggest on earth, believe it or not, pound for pound, is the French. You wouldn't know that, would you? The conspiracy theories are huge in France. They're big in Europe. They're bigger in Europe than they are in America. The biggest on earth is in Asia. And what he's doing is asking about the harp fields, the conspiracy theory on the harp fields. And the harp fields, of course, it's total Green Goddess. You know, they brought out these harp fields. That's H-A-A-R-P. And the idea was that there's one in, we know of one in, you can look them up online, harp fields. There's one in Alaska, and there's one in Russia that we knew about. Well, you know, what the Flame of the East is asking about all these others that popped up overnight. And no, most whites are pretty clueless about that. FOE, they are, you know, that's total Green Goddess, though. When something like that is in Alaska and Russia, and they say it's to monitor bird migration patterns or to monitor something in the Earth's ionosphere, I really don't pay attention to it. When something like that happens, some weird stuff happens across the skies in Norway, the Russians cover for it, and then you find out there's a dozen harp fields in Norway, then you gotta pay attention to it. There's smoke there, and where there's smoke, there's fire. That's a wiffle ball bat at your head. That is total Green Goddess. That's what she's gonna be doing this time. Everything is wide sky, and she's ready for big events, and she's warming up her stuff. But as far as the Asians have another conspiracy theory. They go another step further, which is what I just did is what you see is what you get. It's kind of military technology. They're not going to tell you about it until it's too late. But what the Asians are saying is that the Russians have now linked up with the elements in America, and all these elements are linked up. You know, there's two sides coming out of Nazi Germany. One side went to the Soviet Union, another side went to America. That's what you see is what you get. There's a third element, a controlling element. No one knows where they went other than South America. no one knows what happened to them after that. But the Asian conspiracy theory is that these two sides are linked up, and that everything's linked up and ready to go, ready to rock and roll. And that after the Taliban gave his big Copenhagen turn down, that they put the kibosh in the other side's New World Order. One of the other side's New World Order plans, the latest and greatest, was that, you know, white rabbits are breathing too much oxygen and Western civilization is too prosperous because we take advantage of the world's Earth's natural resources. And then the London social engineering schools have been working on this. In fact, they pretty much all the textbooks in Europe have been like this for probably about 20 years. They're way ahead. In America, it's not nearly as pervasive. And so what the Russians did is they pulled the kibosh on that. But as Copenhagen went down, one thing they started doing, according to the Asian conspiracy theories, is that they started dumping snow on the world. And so what the Flame of the East is asking, if I believe that Russia has that type of weather control. Well, I don't know. It's a green goddess type thing. I will tell you that I have heard consistent rumors out of military intelligence that Russia has the thick end of the stick when it comes to weather control. But that to really get it going outside of Russia, to really get it going outside of Europe, to really get it going planet-wide, they have to link up all these systems. So if they did link up all these systems, which they've done something, could they do it? I don't, the rumor is yes. But I don't know. That's total green goddess stuff. That's funny if they did do it. But the Asians basically believe that they've been dumping snow on the world. And of course, part of the Chinese do not want, all this global warming nonsense. The Russians undermine it, and part of the Indian contingent didn't want it either. And again, Copenhagen was totally undermined. But what they're saying is that not only have they linked up the HAARP fields, and there's obviously smoke behind these HAARP fields. I don't know what they do, but there's smoke there. That not only they link them up, but that Russia took out the big end of the stick on weather control, and they just started dumping snow on their global warming New World Order. Well, that's pretty funny if they did. But, you know, these stories haven't been written, but that's the type of conspiracy theory Asians. The Asians think that, you know, there's one side that gets extremely upset, the pink rabbit side, that we don't share with them enough technology. The other side is basically using that to try to get something over on the other side, and they're in it to win it long term, and they just want to be left alone to develop as they best they can and to be a legitimate partner and to have legitimate partners, which is most of what most of the world wants. But they think we're clever beyond words, behind scenes, when it comes to, what is the big UFO sighting out west here? There's all these bases out west in America. Area 51, and there's several different Area 51s in North America. Well, the Asians are way more up to date on that than most of the Americans. Most of the Americans are pretty oblivious to it. But they think we're clever and sneaky beyond words. At the top, you know, they don't think much of the average. The average person there doesn't run anything, so they assume the average person here doesn't run anything. And the average white looks at the average white in Washington, and they're all dumb animals. But when it comes to military industrial complex and some of the different technologies they have, the Asians probably know more about it than the average European or the average American. They believe it. They believe we have that type of weather control. I think it's funny if they did. But Flame of the East, I have no idea. But I have heard the rumor that Russia had the thick end of the stick with weather control. What they do is, and I think it's what you see is what you get. When they come to bring out any type of component, they split it up between dozens of different groups so that no one knows what's going on with that component. Well, coming out of World War II, what the Nazi Germany did was they split it up between Russia, America, and this third control group. Or so they're saying. And within that, you have another splitting up. And nothing was going to be linked up until they were coming into their given scenario. And I'll go into this more in the next one. But basically, all these components are blown out and subdivided so no one can see what's going on. A handful of control elements can put it all together. It's kind of like if you're doing I think they do the same in Asia or anywhere else when they're working with technology. You put the components over a bunch of different departments because you don't want anyone stealing your potential invention. And then one person can put it all together and then another person puts that component together, and it's kind of like a big pyramid, but very effective to control who sees what or what goes where. And that's what they've done to try to keep our enemy from getting their hands on their goodies. And but the rumor has always been that Russia had the huge end of the stick. Even like the LA Times, Russia reigns over its weather because of the type of. You remember when Chernobyl happened, Flame of the East? When Chernobyl happened, the Russians afterwards and they've done several different weather control experiments that really kind of blew minds. And that just confirmed the rumor that they had the big end of the stick with that piece of technology. In America, it was rumored that we had the big end of the stick with another piece of technology. I'm interested in who controls it and who put it all together, because they definitely linked up the Hartfields. They definitely are doing something and getting ready to do a whole lot more. But that's typical Green Goddess. You're not going to see you're not going to see a stealth bomber until you got a bomb on you. That's how she operates. She's very, very sneaky. And that's fine. As far as how many Hartfields I know about, I don't know. I didn't know there were any in Norway. Now there's like a bunch there. You know, they can clear out a field in between a bunch of trees and put one of those up. They're not high cost. The big thing is linking them all up and other things that I don't fully understand. But you're dealing with that next generation physics. And yes, it is clever stuff. What they're saying for my listeners is that we took out of ancient Sumer, which was another case of, you know, ancient Sumer split up in myths and legends, a type of paleo ancient physics. In Egypt, you have another end of the stick. Ancient paleo ancient physics split up between there. There's another end of the stick. You know, in India, you have another type of paleo ancient physics, and then you have all the ancient Greek mythologies and whatnot. And there were certain technological implications in there. Fascinating stuff, but you're asking me if I, you know, the Asian is asking me if I believe that they've resurrected something from that. You know, like you have the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. They're all God, but they're all separate. Well, if they're all separate, how can they all be God? Well, they're talking about a different type of physics in there. There's a physics of the media and some other really, really kind of interesting stuff. But do I think they did? They've done something in that area, yes. I just don't know the fullest extent of it. But there's all this implied in all these different legends and allegories and whatnot, and that's all they were working on. Actually, the Germans were committed to that for probably two centuries prior, building up to this stuff. So I don't know what they've done, but they've done something. And yes, it was erected. They took everything from Egypt, and they took stuff from Sumer, and they took stuff from all over the place that they considered white, and they tried to find this paleo ancient physics, and they erected something of it. I believe they've done something. I think that's become obvious to most of the world that's looking. And that's what Joseph P. Farrell alludes to in his book, like The Philosopher's Stone and whatnot. But we'll carry on this, and I'll go on with some more questions. So to get back to answering Robert on his Asian superior theory and whatnot, Robert, you're welcome to WhitakerOnline.org, and you're welcome to argue that stuff on the blog. If you can hold up at all, you know, maybe I'll read it. But the argument's was over long, long ago. If America started failing, we'd all move to a Russian, German, Italian access, and it would be the wealthiest place on the planet. It would have the best technology, and everything would be A-okay, but we're going for long-term resolutions into this equation. And, you know, the Chinese have done a good job. They've been given a lot. They've been given, you know, they took all the manufacturing from America, but they would have a pretty good gene pool because they have a bunch of slaves there. They have a captive audience. And so they've done well, and they've ran with that. They've tried to emulate the Third Reich, but they, you know, they're not Germans. And in my opinion, the cast that had the numbers, this particular group that had the numbers for that 1,000 years advance, 1,000 years where they did well by taking all that stuff out of ancient India and whatnot, I don't think they have anywhere near the numbers. And they've started aggressive eugenics and stuff like that. But they are legitimate partners. They're not bad people. There's one side of the equation I don't like, just like there's one side of Anglosphere I don't like. There's another side that you know, they're fine, but I don't really, other than treating them like legitimate partners and treating them with respect, everyone deserves that, and, you know, that's fine. But as far as they're superior, they're this, or they have none of our weaknesses and all of our strengths, that's just simply nonsense. It's laughable. It's laughable to me, but you can believe what you want, and you're welcome to argue your theories on WhitakerOnline.org. But keep in mind that someone like Bob has forgotten more about Asians than any racialist on this earth. But white racialists always look to Japan. They said, well, they don't let any non-Japanese in, and that's a strength. And it has that appearance. But you're assuming that race isn't real and that they're not going to have a whole new set of, a whole different set of strengths and weaknesses. And their problem comes in from internalizing things instead of externalizing things and opening it up, and browning out or something like that and moving on. They have a whole new set of problems, a whole new set of challenges. But they certainly are bright people, and you'll find that they are, if you act, even, many elements of the Germans were Nordic supremacists. And you could argue that most of everything that came from Europe came from the north down. You know, Charles Martel was a Frank. When the north gets together, they stop something. You know, the south pretty much just caves into everything, and then they, then the north generally gets something together and goes nuts. You know, one group of northern Europeans goes nuts and they come in and conquer everything. Western civilization, as you know, under Nordic supremacism, is defined as an ever increasing number of northern migrations. There's probably some truth to that, in my opinion. Right now you have enough upset Europeans that whoever you let get away with it will go at it. It doesn't matter whether it's after Hurricane Katrina and a bunch of probably Scotch-Irish. If you let them get away with it, they're going to respond in a way that they should after this amount of negative conditioning. You got 2010, we're 15 years out of 15 years under a new media easily. The internet, and they're going to respond in a very aggressive manner. In Italy, if you let them get away with it, if they ease up the rules, they will respond extremely aggressively. It wouldn't matter whether it's in Texas or Oslo, Norway. Any white on this planet, if you let them get away with it, they will respond in a way that would probably shock most of the world in aggression. With the exception of the Asians. The Asians know a little bit about us, and they're very respectful. Many people are intimidated by the Chinese, and they do this fear of Chinese, fear of China. The Chinese think it's quite funny that they're allowed to control all these white people with this stuff. And even in the Pentagon, you know, they're leery of this, they're leery of that, but they use that to get budget constraints. I know what type of technology we have, and no one's going to be doing anything on this planet that certain groups don't approve of. That doesn't mean they couldn't be used in the end game. That doesn't mean there's not going to be big war across this planet, and I'm going to go into that in 29, because I think it's important for some things. Some things have happened in regards to China. You know, but there are two sides in China. You will find that out anywhere, and one of them is good, and the other one's pink rabbits. And the pink rabbit side wants a blended humanity, which of course the Chinese, most of the Chinese aren't interested in. They're interested in being Chinese. But to answer your question on IQ and creativity, well, the highest IQ in Western civilization, some of the highest IQs in the world, are the Jew rabbits. I think we can agree on that. Everyone agrees that the Jew rabbits have the highest IQ. The Jew rabbits study real hard. They're like little ants working, studying hard. I mean, Jews have been accused of everything, but Jew rabbits never get accused of being lazy. They get in the best schools. They get to the top of the Federal Reserve. They get to the top of any society they've ever been in. But they've never been creative enough to keep themselves from getting kicked out. They've never been creative enough to keep disaster from befalling them. Not once. Not once. And now in America, they're $120 trillion in the hole, and they're at the top of the Federal Reserve, and Bernanke's about probably ready to get kicked out as well. Excuse me. But if they're so creative, how come they're not creative enough to stave off disaster? If IQ is a function of creativity, how come they're not ruling the world forever and haven't been ruling it since day one? They're certainly bred themselves up. They certainly got European genes. They certainly have done a tremendous amount of inbreeding and whatnot to jack up IQs. But they are not creative enough to stave off disaster. They never once have done it in the history of the Jew rabbits and everyone behind them. So if IQ is a function of creativity, why aren't the Jews creative enough to avoid disaster? Because it's not all a function of IQ. There's something else to it. And that's something I want to give the racialists that listen to this. a heads up on. There is a new field that there's smoke in, and I've known about it for quite some time, but I don't really, you know, I've told you before in this, I'll make it very clear, I'm a skeptic. It's a generational thing. I've determined that. But coming out of World War II, we have all kinds of stuff happening. One of the biggest things that came out were the studies on consciousness. And I never really understood what consciousness was, and it was explained to me over the past few years as consciousness is a scientific and medical term for soul. You know, in ancient Egypt, they actually believed in an afterlife. They believed that birth and death weren't just, were just like a green light into this world and a green light out of this world. They actually believe that. Most of our ancient ancestors believe that. But consciousness is the modern, to some extent, it's been described to me as in a way that I can understand, because I'm not good at understanding this stuff necessarily, is that it's a modern medical scientific word for soul. So they're not calling it soul, they're calling it consciousness. And there's been a tremendous amount of study onto this. And the Princeton study just came out, and it was all over the TV and everything else, that life does not begin with birth and does not end with death. And that's what they're talking about. They're talking about this concept of soul. What most racialists don't know is that there are going to be differences, massive differences racially, based on consciousness. Consciousness is going to be one of the big things in regards to race. You know, we know about the differences in physical differences. We know about the differences in biochemistry and body chemistry. All kinds of different differences when it comes to the body and race. When it comes to the genome experiment, a genome project. When it comes to mental. We know quite a bit, and of course they haven't revealed everything, but behind the scenes they do know everything. But besides body and besides the brain, there's going to be another difference. That difference is consciousness. This difference is, you know, like the old Africans used to say, Africans have a different soul. Well, they have a different consciousness. Our consciousness is where the change happened in 1685. Something happened on a conscious level. It happened on another level, and has to do with this next generation physics. Most likely, that's what I'm putting together, because in ancient Egypt, if you believe they had a unified philosophy, religion, and science, and they believed that they had a soul that didn't die and there was something to it, then there would be something scientific to it. You see where I'm going with this. That's just consistent thought. So there was always this type of thinking, apparently, in Western thought and whatnot. But the Nazis apparently went wild with it, because everything goes back to World War II. You have the LSD, all the stuff with LSD, that all has to do with human consciousness. One of the problems with, like, the Princeton study, one of the challenges is the same challenge you get into with all the medical research over the past 20, 30 years and the genome project. They're not going to reveal anything racially until they have to. What I've been told is that when it comes to race, body and mind is kind of like the tip of the iceberg. You've ever seen one of these pictures where you have a tip of the iceberg hanging outside the water, and the tip of the iceberg looks like a mountain. But then they back up and they show you how big the iceberg is underneath the water, and it's like a continent of ice. I've heard that the consciousness component is like that. It's underneath the water, and that's the biggest racial difference. The most easily noticed racial difference. It's just profoundly different. And that's one of the challenges with miscegenation, is it kills consciousness or starts degrading consciousness. The ancient Chaldees believed that all this stuff about blood purity, the more pure the blood, the higher level of consciousness, the more dominant the soul, that type of thing. But by degrading the blood, you degrade the consciousness and so on and so forth, etc. I don't fully understand it, but I'm going to give the racialists that listen to this a heads up and start looking at that information. Apparently, most of the studies on human consciousness, there was a great many, of course, in the Soviet Union, because there's two groups of Nazis here. There was a tremendous amount in America. I'm guessing the stuff in the Soviet Union would be more racially easily read from a racial perspective if they've released it any. than the stuff in America. But the Princeton study is not geared toward anything racial at all, I don't think. It's kind of like something, you know, if you're good at digging through something and understanding the differences and understanding all their language and lingo and bringing out what is the difference, what is the differences in consciousness based on race, they're not going to give that to you any more than they're going to get. They're going to admit that race exists in a genome project. That's not how these guys operate, obviously. But that this is the missing link. This is the big shoe that when it drops is supposed to make a tidal wave. The difference is based on consciousness. And of course, you know, body, mind, and soul, and that's really what they're talking about. It's kind of interesting, kind of fascinating stuff. I don't know, other than to give you a heads up, but they've had the Princeton study, and the Princeton study came out, and it kind of made waves. But before they release a Princeton study, they've probably had this stuff behind the scenes probably since World War II. So someone found out a whole lot about us in World War II. But they've come out with the studies on consciousness, and they're now what you see is what you get. I just don't fully understand it other than to give you a heads up and point you in a direction. There are going to be radical differences based on race, though. There are going to be radical different consciousness between different rabbit groups. You know, African rabbits are going to have their own unique consciousness. White rabbits are going to have a radically different. I've been told that the difference is as noticeable as the difference between a grasshopper and a man. Excuse me. If you see a grasshopper standing next to a man, you're most likely going to be able to tell one's a human and one's an insect. That type of thing. I've been told that the differences in consciousness is that radical. It's so radical. It's almost like they should have different bodies and whatnot. In other words, you might have three or four different different consciousness on this planet. They look like totally different species. But I don't know how they're measuring that. I don't know how they're gauged that. I've just been given a heads up on that. And since they've come out with the Princeton study, it's made hay and the Huffington Review, Huffington Post about how we don't our consciousness. Life doesn't begin with birth or end at death, and you know they've come out with all this stuff, and I've known about it, but I really don't know what it means from a racial perspective. Other than I've been told that is the major difference, that is the easiest to spot differentiation. I just don't know how to dig it out, but that's something for. So when it comes to. When it comes to consciousness, consider this a first heads up for the racialists. There's something big in that area. It's so big that apparently they've worried about how it's going to come out because it's overwhelming and obvious. But I don't know enough about how they're measuring. I don't know enough about the science. I don't fully understand it other than to give you a heads up and point you in a direction. But that will be the major differences between the groups. It will be this element of consciousness. I just don't know enough about it. But the ideal that all humans would have the same consciousness, well, that's kind of ridiculous. If you have different races are going to have something if there is science behind it. But there is a science behind it. I learned this the hard way. If there's smoke there, there's fire. If a Princeton study comes out and it's what you see is what you get, then they know a whole lot more behind the scenes because they don't release a human genome project unless they know everything and they've known it for a long time and figure out its consequences. That's how they operate. And everyone's playing into these events, at least everyone on our side. And so this should be interesting. when it comes down to predicting our green goddess or what she's doing now, I don't know because I don't know I don't know enough about the past. As crazy as you get with predicting what may have happened, what they may be getting ready to do. You're dealing with a rabbit that will build a plane and jump out of it. Trying to predict the behavior of where they might go with this stuff is I'm sorry, you're going to be wrong. And as a skeptic, I'll give you a word of warning. There are baseball bats in these areas. That's all I know, that there baseball bats do exist. They're not fantasy or fiction. They do exist, and race is real. Race is as real as a heart attack. And so we'll just have to wait and see, and we will be seeing probably, I'm guessing this spring, they're gonna start this stuff. And it's, you know, for the most part already started. Most of the world won't realize it until they're in the middle of some huge war. In 29, I'm going to talk about the strategy employed. The strategy employed based on my opinion. I was asked my opinion of the strategy employed. What is the actual strategy? I'm going to go into it because it's now become pretty much what you see is what you get. I call it passive engagement. Give them everything but their New World Order, and coming into critical times like 2003, 2008, start rolling back on them. Start selling them out. They got a blind spot. They have a few blind spots. And I'm going to talk about white rabbits adopting animals. Yeah, why white rabbits like adopting animals. I'm going to tell you a story about Izzy the deer. And then we're going to talk about some propaganda stuff, and I'm going to go over some different things going out propaganda in regards to. On regards to what to do with white rabbits when you're affirming a meme. And I'll be back on 29. 29 is going to be out probably a lot faster than you're used to in the next few days or so. Definitely before next weekend. Definitely before February 1st and whatnot. But I'll look forward to talking to you again then. And this is another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. And this was 27, 28, or a bunch of questions and answers. This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.